called a Judahite, but he is afraid of two things. One, that father would report him, and two, that he would demand to know the truth about me. Trust me, Mr. Hasid, I know my father. He would sell us both out to prove his loyalty to Carpathia and the GC. I am urging my brother not to admit anything to father, and yet I do not know how long he can avoid being tested to the ultimate. The only way to keep from officially applying for work there is to run away or tell my father the truth. Can you help in any way? I am sorry to trouble you with this during such a terrible time for you. Rest assured that I am praying for you, and while I assume you know this, Leah reports that your compatriots in the safe house are also upholding you daily. With utmost respect and honor, your sister in Christ, Ming Toy. David called personnel. Can you give me the status on a Chang Wong? Yes, sir. Impressive resume, mentioned publicly, at least among the brass by Carpathia. A no-brainer. He's going to work here as soon as we can get him processed. Only question is where. I suppose you want him. Everybody else does. Can't say for sure, just wondering. Your area makes the most sense. You wouldn't turn him down, would you? Too early to tell, but I'm not a follower. Just because everybody wants him doesn't mean I should be desperate to snag him. True enough, but he'd be an asset. What's next? Don't know. We expected him yesterday. It's in his court. He completes the paperwork, makes his app official, and we make an offer. And if he accepts, he's in. He's not graduated high school. We have tutors. He could teach high school. When would he start? A few days. Delay would be because of the new freeze. You saw that, right? No. Should have it in your email. David didn't want to appear too eager. I'll find it, thanks. You want this kid if we can get him? David had to think fast. If he got him and then David and the others disappeared, the kid could be found out as an enemy of the state. But if their disappearance looked like an accident, there would be no suspicion of them or anyone they associated with. On the other hand, if taking the mark was prerequisite to hiring, the issue was moot. The kid would refuse, the father would turn him in, end of story. David would not be under suspicion for wanting him or spending time with him. Would I be able to do a preliminary with him? Interview? Not protocol, but I don't see the harm. Where's he staying? 4054. That close to Hannah. Wonder if she knows. Thanks. David hurried to the hospital. Hannah greeted him professionally and asked the typical questions about bleeding, discomfort, and pain. Then she asked him to follow her to a private room for removal of the stitches. You look okay, but distracted, she said, dousing his head with disinfectant and soaking the bandage. Can't imagine why, he groused. Sarcasm? Remember, I'm on your side. Did you know the Wongs are staying on your floor? Who are the Wongs? David smacked himself in the forehead. Terrific, she said. So much for sterility. Close your eyes. He obeyed, and she doused him again. So, who are the Wongs? He told her the story. What are you going to do? She said. Bug their room? You can do that? I can do anything. I'm gathering that. But how? I'd tell you, but then... Yeah, I know, you'd have to kill me. She looked embarrassed to have said that with him just having lost his fiancée. I'm sorry, she whispered. My fault, he said, I started it. She lightly tugged at the bandage, making his eyes water. Bear with me, she said, squirting more liquid. That stuff's supposed to make it easier? We tell ourselves that, she said. Fortunately, you had a good surgeon. Oh yeah, it was me. I cut enough hair that all we're dealing with is scalp and wound and stitches. Imagine if there was hair, too. I don't want to think about it. Think about something else, and I'll hurry. You can't just yank it? Not with stitches. Those have to come out the right way. If I pull one out with the bandage, you're on the ceiling. Now, try to get your mind on something else. Like what? She stopped and put her wrists on her hips, careful to keep her gloved hands from touching anything. David, I hardly know you. How would I know what you have to think about? He shrugged. Think about freedom, she said. About being away from here forever. You call that freedom? It's just another form of prison. I've been wondering about that, she said. It has to be less tension, don't you think? Different kind, I guess. Ow! Sorry, be brave. Tell me more. Well, we won't have to worry about who's watching and listening and whether my secure email and phone connections have been compromised. We won't have to worry that we've already been found out and they're just letting us hang ourselves and expose others before they arrest us. That's what I was thinking, she said. But we'll never be free again. We'll be fugitives. So you've already ashcanned my idea? No, why? I signed it to Mac and Abdullah. Because if it works, no one's even looking for us. We get new IDs, change our looks, and start over. But without the loyalty mark. She hesitated. Well, yes, there is that. Hold on. There we go. She held before his eyes the long bandage and a pair of surgical scissors. Besides disinfectant, it showed his blood and the imprint of his wound, two staples and several stitches. Can I ask you something? He said, totally off the subject. You mean, may I? Ah, one of those, showing off your education. Sorry, incurable. I guess we'll need a grammar cop at the safe house, in case Tzion and Buck are out. Anyway, why do you people think we want to see that stuff? The yucky bandage, I mean. Yucky? She morphed into baby talk. Does he hate to see that yucky stuff? Doctors and nurses are forever doing what you just did. Just remove it and toss it. You think I need to see it or I won't pay? She shrugged. You all must just love this stuff, he said. That's all I can figure. By the way, you never said anything about staples. You just answered your own question. I'm lost. I showed you so you know what's next. The stitches are separate, so they come out individually. It's not one of those deals where I cut or untie, and then the whole thing just sort of tickles as it comes looping out. It won't hurt, but there are several. And there are two staples that have to stay in until the stitches are out, just in case, to hold everything together. When the stitches are gone, I'll know whether the scar can contain that big brain of yours. Then I have to get under each of these two staples, one at a time, with a wire cutter. You're joking. No, sir, I cut through the staple. Ouch. Not if you don't flinch. You're the one who better not flinch. I'm good, I promise. Then I grip each remaining end, that would be two for each staple, and slowly curl it out. That's gotta hurt. She hesitated. I needed a real fast knot at all, right there. I admit you'll feel it more than the stitches. It's a bigger invasion, thus a busier evacuation. A busier evacuation? You could be in management. What should I say? The big yucky staple displaced more tissue than the itty-bitty stitchies? If any of the scar tissue adhered to the metal, you may feel it give way. I don't like the sound of give way. What a wuss. It won't even bleed. And if I feel it's too early and it would cause trauma, we'll put it off. Not unless it would kill me. I mean it, Hannah. I want to be done with this. You don't want any reason to have to come back and talk to me. It's not that. No, she said dismissively, obviously feigning insult. I can take it. I don't know any other believers with reasons to come around, but that's all right. Just leave me here to suffer alone. Get on with it. Shut up, and I will. Now think about something else. Can you talk while you work? Oh, sure. I told you I was good. Then tell me your story while you do this. Story's longer than the procedure, David. Then take your time. Now there. That was a sweet thing to say. Chapter 13. Hannah Palemoon's story actually took David's mind off what she was doing. And she did take her time, pausing between each stitch. She teased him by showing him the first, but his look stopped her. She had been raised on a Cherokee reservation in what was now known as the United North American States. You wouldn't believe the misconceptions about Native Americans, she said. Never been to the States, even when it was just the United States of America. But I read about it. They called you Indians because of Columbus's mistake. Exactly. He thinks he's in the West Indies, so we must be Indians. Now it's Indian this, Indian that. Indian tribes, cowboys and Indians, Indian nation, Indian reservation, the Indian problem, American Indians, that was my favorite. And, of course, anyone who hadn't visited the reservation assumed we lived in teepees. That's what I would have guessed, David said, from pictures. The pictures are from the tourist sites. They want to see old Native American culture. We're happy to show it. Dress in the old garb, dance the old dances, sell them anything they want made from colorful beads. They didn't want to see our real homes. Not teepees, I take it. Just like any other depressed economy. Multifamily units, tiny houses, house trailers. And the tourists didn't want to know my dad was a mechanic and my mom worked in the office of a plumbing company. They'd rather believe we were part of a raiding party, drank fire water, or worked in a casino. Your parents really didn't? My mother liked to play the slots. Dad lost a paycheck one night playing blackjack, never went back. And you were a vet. Vet's assistant, that's all. My uncle, my mother's brother, was self-trained. Didn't have to be licensed or certified or any of that other stuff, like on the outside. Unless you wanted business from the outside, and he didn't. And he wasn't into weird stuff either. Tourists asked if he danced and chanted and brought dead pets back to life. He was a good reader, read everything he could find on patching up animals because he loved them and there were so many of them. You didn't want to be a vet? Nope. I read all the books about Clara Barton and Florence Nightingale. Did well in school, especially science, and was encouraged by a teacher to take advantage of opportunities for Native Americans at state universities. Went to Arizona State and never looked back. Cost me more because I wasn't from Arizona, but I wanted distance between me and the reservation. Why? I wasn't ashamed or anything. I just thought I had more opportunity outside, and I did. Where did you hear about God? Everywhere. There were Christians on the reservation. We weren't churchgoers, but we knew a lot who were. That teacher used to talk to me about Jesus. I wasn't interested. She called it witnessing, and that sounded way too weird for me. Then at university, they were everywhere. You could get witness to walking to class. Never intrigued you? Not enough to go to any meetings. I was afraid I would wind up in a cult or a multi-level marketing scheme. The big thing with those kids was getting people to admit they were sinners and that they couldn't do anything about their sin. Tell you the truth, I never felt like a sinner. Not then. So, wrong approach for you. Not their fault. I was a sinner, of course. I was just blind to it. What finally made the difference? When I found out who disappeared in the vanishings, I was mad. Those churchgoers I knew, Christians from university, my high school teacher. So you must have had an inkling. An inkling? I knew. People were saying God did this, and I believed them, and I hated him for it. I thought about those people and how sincere and devout they were, how they cared enough for me to tell me something that made me think they were strange. I didn't want any part of a God who would remove them and leave me here. I wanted a hero, someone to believe in. But not him. Then I saw all the news about Carpathia. The Bible talks about how so many will be deceived. I was at the top of the list. Bought the whole package. Found out he needed medical people, hopped the next plane to New York. Wasn't so sure about moving on to this beautiful God-forsaken desert, but I was still loyal then. I started getting squirrely about Carpathia when he started sounding like a politician, trying to put everything in the best light. He never seemed genuinely remorseful about all the chaos and the loss. I didn't agree with him when he said all this proved that God couldn't have been behind the disappearances, because why would a loving God do that? I believed God had done it, and it proved he wasn't so loving after all. Hannah finished her stitch removal work, stripped off and discarded her rubber gloves, washed and dried her hands, and pulled on another pair of gloves. She sat on a stool next to David. Still have the staples, but we can both use a break. Somebody had to lead you to God. I'm dying to know where you met another believer here. Didn't know there was one till I saw your mark plain as day as you lay there on the ground. I tried wiping it off, then almost danced when I realized what it was. I couldn't see mine and had never seen another, just read about it. Where? Remember when we were told that Tzion ben Judah's website was contraband? Course. That was all I needed to hear. I was there. It was all Greek to me until he predicted the earthquake. First, it happened. Second, my whole reservation was swallowed up. Lost everybody, mom, dad, two little brothers, extended family. I'll bet we were one of the only places in the world that had no survivors. Zero. Wow. You can imagine how I felt. Grief-stricken, alone, angry, amazed that the weird guy on the net got it right. Can't imagine that convincing you, though. Seems you would have been madder than ever at God. In a way, I was. But I really began to see the light about Nikolai. You were here then, right? You heard the rumors. David nodded. People said he bullied his way onto a chopper on the roof of the old headquarters building, which I have no problem with. I probably would have done the same. Self-preservation instinct and all that. But no calls for help. No orders for more rescue craft. People hanging on the struts of his chopper, screaming, pleading for their lives, he orders the pilot off the roof. Probably couldn't have saved anybody anyway, the way the thing went down, but you've got to try, don't you? Isn't that true leadership? Then he was phony again. The remorse didn't ring true. I just started doing my job and forgetting my idealism. But I couldn't tear myself away from the Ben Judah site. Then millions and millions joined in, and so many of them became believers. I read about the mark of the sealed believer, and I was envious. I wasn't sure I wanted in yet, but I wanted to be part of some family. But you know what got to me about Sion? Listen to me calling a man like that by his first name. But that's just it. He's clearly one of the most brilliant scholars ever born, but he had a way of putting the cookies on the lower shelf for people like me. I understood what he was saying. He made it plain and clear, and he was transparent. He lost his whole family in a worse way than I did. He was so loving. You could sense it, feel it right through the computer. He prayed for people, ministered to them, the way the best doctors do. And that was what finally persuaded you? Actually, no. I believed he was sincere, and I came to believe he was right. But all of a sudden, I went scientific on him. I was going to take this slow, not rush into anything, study it carefully. Well, he starts predicting these plagues, and here they come. Didn't take me long after that. People suffered. These were real. And he knew they were coming. Did you ever see yourself as a sinner? She stood and found the small wire cutters. Uh-oh, David said. Just relax. Listen to the nice lady's story. She gently pressed her fingers on each side of the staple and eased the cutting edge of the clippers in. With both hands, she forced the handles together, and the staple broke with a snap. David jumped. You still with us? She said. Didn't feel a thing. Just scared me. Story of my life. She snapped the other while continuing. Sion warned us. You know this. Surely you're part of the readership. David nodded. I've spoken to him by phone. You have not. He nodded. Don't nod with loose staples in your head. And if you lie to me again, I'll twist them for you. I'm not lying. I know you're not. That's what makes me so jealous. You know you're going to get to meet him someday. Better bring a mop and bucket. You can just squeegee me off the floor and pour me down the drain. Me too. But you know him already. Your best buds. Just by phone. She mimicked him. Just by phone? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we talk. He calls once in a while. How you doing, Dave? Just finished my message. David had to laugh and quickly realized it was the first time since... Anyway, she continued, pulling the ends of one staple neatly from his scalp. See? Good timing, good technique. Uh-oh, do I see brain oozing there? Nope, must be empty. David shook his head. The story, Hannah. Oh, yeah. Sion promises us that if we start reading the Bible, it'll be like a mirror to us, and we might not like what we see. Remember that? Do I? The other staple came out just as easily. She made a show of presenting it to him, and he waved it away. I didn't have a Bible, and you don't exactly see them lying around here anywhere, but Sion had that site where you could call up the whole Bible in your language. Well, not Cherokee, but you know. So I'm reading the Bible on the net in the wee hours. And couldn't get enough of it? No. I did it wrong. I didn't read his little guide on where to start and what to look for. I just started in at the beginning, and I loved all those stories in Genesis, but when I got into Exodus and then... what's the next one? Leviticus. Yeah. Ugh. I'm wondering, where's the mirror? I don't like what I'm seeing, all right, but it's no mirror. Finally, I go into his site where you can ask questions. Only a million people a day do that. I didn't expect him to answer personally, of course, and he didn't. Probably was on the phone with his pal Dave. But somebody pointed me to that guide place. I start with John, and then Romans, and then Matthew. Talk about desperate for more and seeing yourself. My besetting sin, the way Sion described it, was pride. I was my own God, captain of my own destiny. I got to that Romans Road thing, taking you down the path of being born in sin, separated from God, his gift is eternal life. Man, I was there. Stayed up all night and didn't even feel the effects, working a full shift the next day. Wanted to tell everybody, but wanted to stay alive, too. Hannah doused David's head with disinfectant and dabbed it dry with a clean towel. I'm going to cover you with betadine now, friend, so you don't look like a skunk with a lateral stripe. You'll still look funny, but not from so far away. And we'd better get out of here before they send in a search party. Just a minute. Hmm? She was dabbing at his head again. Just wanted to thank you. I needed to hear that. Those stories never get old. Thanks, David. Can you imagine how long I've wanted to tell someone that? Oh, and one more thing? Yeah? Say hey to Tzion for me?
You don't either, Buck said.
I do too, Zeke said. Come here, look. Buck followed Zeke to his room, turning to give Rayford and Chloe a do-you-believe-this look. Sure enough, just as Zeke had claimed, hanging in his closet were four soiled, wrinkled GC uniforms. Where in the world? After that horseman deal, Zeke said, remember? Buck nodded. Dead GC all over the place. Dad cruised me around in the middle of the night trying to stay ahead of the recovery teams. I didn't like yanking clothes off dead bodies, but Dad and me both thought they were gifts from God. I got their IDs and everything, but you can't use the same name as goes with the uniform.
I can't. Zeke sighed.
These guys turned up missing. Unless somebody identified their naked bodies, they're listed as AWOL or unaccounted for. You show up with their name, rank, and serial number, who do you think they're going to pin the murder on? Or the swiping of the uni?
I get it.
Yeah, huh?
So what do you want to do, put a new name patch on? Make a new ID?
Yeah, only I mix and match. Well, here, first see if this one fits. It's the biggest I got.
I can see already it's going to be short.
But look at the cuffs in the shirt, the pants, and the jacket. They leave lots of hem in them so they won't have to make custom-made duds for everybody.
You do tailoring work too, Zeke?
Not in front of everybody, and I don't brag on it, but yeah, I do everything. Full-service shop.
Buck found the trousers about 2 inches short and the waist snug. The shirt was close, but needed another inch in the sleeves. Same with the jacket. The cap was way too small. Buck shook his head when Zeke rummaged around and found his sewing kit. It was all he could do to keep from bursting out laughing when the big kid popped half a dozen straight pins in his mouth and knelt to do his work.
What do you mean you mix and match?
Well, Zeke said around the pins, your ID is probably going to be from a dead civilian. You've already done your own facial surgery, not on purpose, but you did. I'll dye your hair dark, use dark contacts, and shoot a picture to go with the new papers. You want to find someone you like? You've seen my files before. You pulled Greg North out of that stack. Grab a few, pick someone about your same size and everything. The less I have to change, the better.
Can you give me a rank above Albie's?
No can do, Zeke said. See the shoulders and the collar on that jacket? That's your basic peacekeeper. If your collar had another stripe or two and stuck straight up instead of laying flat, you could be as high as a commander.
And you can't do that much tailoring.
That's big-time work. I'd have to charge you double.
Buck smiled, but Zeke roared.
Did you almost check your wallet to see if you could handle it?
Almost.
Dad says I'm a card.
Zeke was suddenly sober. Know where your dad is yet? Zeke shook his head.
Didn't like what I saw on TV, though. Something about starting that Mark thing with guys they've got behind bars already. Use them as test cases.
He shook his head. Your dad won't take the Mark.
Oh, I know that. No way, never. Which means I'll probably never see him again.
Well, don't think that way, Zeke. There's always hope.
Well, maybe, and I'm praying. But I'll tell you when there's no more hope, and that's when they line these guys up for the Mark. They get a choice, right?
That's what I understand.
Dad won't even think about it. He's already got a Mark. I've seen his, and he's seen mine. That's how we know. And he won't start wondering if he can have both and stay alive. He'd never do a thing that looks like he's a Carpathia guy. He'll say, no, you don't, and they'll thump him right in there. I don't know how they're going to kill him in jails, whether they got guillotines or if they just shoot him, but that's how Dad's getting out of jail, in a box.
On the way back to his office, David felt strangely warmed and encouraged. He loved Hannah's personality and way of expressing herself. She would be a good friend. She was older than he, but didn't act like it. He had begun to wonder if there was an oasis of good feeling anywhere. David worked his magic on the computer, patching into the bug in room 4054.
He slipped on earphones and found himself in the middle of a heated argument. He heard the television and Mrs. Wong pleading, "Shh, TV, shh, TV." Her husband shouted back in Chinese. David knew there were many dialects, but he didn't understand even one. It soon became clear that father and son were arguing and that the mother wanted to watch television. The only words David could make out from the males were an occasional GC and Carpathia. The son was soon in tears, the father berating him. David recorded the conversation in the unlikely event he could download voice-activated software that would not only recognize the language and the dialect, but that would also convert it to English or Hebrew, his two languages. Suddenly he heard the father speak more harshly than ever, the son pleading and, it sounded like, collapsing in tears. The mother pleaded for quiet again, the father barked at her, and then it sounded to David as if someone picked up a phone and punched buttons. Finally, English.
"Miss Akbar, you speak Chinese? Pakistani? Me no. English, okay? Okay. Yes, Wong. A question for you. New worker get loyalty mark first, yeah? Okay, how soon? Not till then. Maybe sooner, okay? Mrs. Wong and me get too, okay? Son Chang Wong want to be first to get mark."
The boy cried out in Chinese, and it sounded as if Mr. Wong covered the phone before screaming at him. Someone left the room, David assumed Chang, and slammed a door.
"Mr. Akbar, you do mark on boy, mother, father? You no do? Who? Moon, Walter Moon. Not Moon himself. Moon people, okay. Son first, picture, take picture, son. When? Yes, I talk to Moon people. Bye-bye."
David heard Mr. Wong call out something more calmly, and then something from Chang, muffled. The father was angry again and had the last word. Then he whispered something in Chinese to his wife. She responded with what sounded like resignation. David wondered if Chang had told his father why he would refuse the mark, or if he simply said no. When the apartment was silent except for the television, David saved the file and forwarded it to Ming Toy with a request. "If it's not too much trouble or too painful, it would help me to know what was said here. I'm guessing your father is pressuring Chang to get himself hired and to be among the first to take the mark. I'll try other sources inside to see how soon they're going to start administering the mark, but help me with this at your earliest convenience if you would. I regret eavesdropping, but I'm sure you want to preclude this disaster too." David dialed 4054. Mr. Chang answered.
"Chang, please? You want Chang Wong?"
"Yes, please."
"Talk to him about GC job?"
"Yes, sir."
"You Mr. Moon?"
"No, David Hasid. I met you last week."
"Yes, Mr. Hasid. Chang work for you?"
"I don't know yet. That's what I'd like to talk to him about."
"He here, you talk to him. You in computers, yes?"
"Much of my area is computers, yes."
"He best. He help you. Work for you. You talk to him. Wait, Chang!"
He switched to Chinese, and the boy argued from the other room. Finally, he came to the phone.
"Hello,"
the boy said, sounding as if he'd lost his best friend. "Chang, it's David. Just listen. Your sister told me what was going on. Let me try to help. It'll get your father off your back if you get interviewed by a director, right?"
"Yes."
"It'll buy us some time. You don't worry, okay?"
"I'll try not to."
"Don't say anything, but we might even find a way to get you out of here."
"Before the mark?"
"Don't say that, Chang. Just play along for now, understand?"
"Yes, David."
"Call me Mr. Hasid, okay? We can't sound like friends, and we sure don't want to sound like fellow believers, brothers, right?"
"Right, Mr. Hasid."
"Attaboy, Chang. Let's do this right. You call my assistant tomorrow and arrange for an appointment with me. I'll tell Tiffany to expect your call, and you tell her I asked you to call her, all right?"
"Yes, sir."
"Everything will be all right, Chang."
"I hope so."
"You can trust me."
"Yes, Mr. Hasid."
Chapter 14. Rayford and the others were invited to listen in as Tion grilled his former professor and mentor on the history of God's chosen people. Chaim, with the wire finally out of his mouth, slowly worked his jaw and rubbed his face, clearly relieved. He was not animated, however, and hard as it seemed Tion tried, Chaim appeared still tormented by the same things he had discussed with Rayford a few nights before.
Come, come, Chaim, Tzion said. This is exciting, dramatic, miraculous stuff. This is the greatest story ever told. I know where God has provided a place of refuge for his children, but I'm not going to tell you until you are ready. You must be prepared in case God calls you to be a warrior for the Lord, to go into a battle of words and wit. Your knowledge would help carry you, but God would have to be your strength. I believe that if he confirms in your heart that you shall be his vessel, he will empower you with supernatural abilities to fight the satanic miracles of Antichrist. Can you envision the victory, my friend? How I wish I were the one going.
How I wish that too, Chaim said.
No, no. If you are God's man in God's time, you must never want out of this most sacred duty and calling. The history of this country carries much discussion of a manifest destiny. Well, my brother, if ever a people had a manifest destiny, it is our people, yours and mine. And now we include our Gentile brothers who are grafted into the branch because of their belief in the Messiah and his work of grace and sacrifice and forgiveness on the cross. Jesus is the Messiah. Jesus is the Christ. He is risen.
He is risen indeed,
Chaim said, but he did not match Tzion's energy. Do you hear yourself? Tzion mimicked Chaim, mumbling, He is risen indeed. No, he is risen indeed. Amen, praise the Lord, hallelujah. You could go to Jerusalem, a leader of men, a conqueror. You would stand up to the lying, blaspheming enemy of the Lord Most High. You would expose Antichrist to the world as the evil man indwelt by Satan and rally the devout believers to repel the mark of the beast. Oh, Chaim, Chaim, you are learning so much. That old brain is still good, still facile, still receptive. You are getting this, I know you are. If not you, whom shall go? You seem uniquely qualified, but much as I dream it, I cannot presume to make this assignment. How I wish I was the one and could be there in person to see it. If it is you, I will want every detail. Should the forces of evil come against you and you should be overwhelmed by the power of the enemy, God would provide a way, a place, and you, my friend, would lead the people to that place. And the Lord God himself would protect you and care for you and watch over you and provide for you. Do you realize, Chaim, that God has promised that it will be as in the days of old? Think of it, weak and frail and wicked as they were, unfaithful, ignorant, impatient, and dallying with other gods, the God of the universe himself catered to the children of Israel. Do you understand what that means? You could lead your people, his people, to a place that will be almost impossible to go into or out from. If you were to be there until the glorious appearing of the Christ, what would you eat? What would you wear? The Bible says God himself will provide as he did in the days of old. He will send food, delicious, nourishing, fulfilling food, manna from heaven. And do you know about your clothes?
No, Tzion, Chaim said wearily, a tease in his voice. Whatever you do, do not neglect to tell me about my clothes.
I won't. And you will be grateful, not to mention amazed. If I amaze you, will you admit it?
I will admit it.
Promise me.
My word is my bond, my excitable young friend. Amaze me and I will say so.
Your clothes will not wear out. Tzion stopped with a flourish, his hands in the air.
They won't?
Are you amazed?
Maybe. Tell me more.
Now you want to hear it.
I always want to hear it, Tzion. I am just unworthy, scared to death, unqualified, unprepared, and unworthy.
If God calls you, you shall be none of those. You would be Moses. The Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob would go before you, and the glory of the Lord would be your rear guard.
I would need a rear guard? Who would be chasing me?
Not Pharaoh's army, I assure you. But if it were, God would make a way for you to escape. Carpathia's hordes would be pursuing you, and for all his talk of peace and disarmament, who has access to the residue of the world's weapons, surrendered willingly to the lying purveyor of peace? But if you needed the Red Sea parted yet again, God would do it. For what have we learned, my little Hebrew school child? Don't me, Chaim. Tell the rabbi what you learned about the great stories, the miracles from the Torah.
that they are not just stories, not just examples, myths for our encouragement.
Excellent, but rather, what are they? What are they, my star pupil?
Truth.
Truth, yes.
They actually happened.
Yes, Chaim. They happened because God is all-powerful. He says they happened, and if he says he will do it again,
what?
He will.
He will.
Oh, the privilege, Chaim. Deal with your fears, deal with your doubts, give them to God. Offer yourself in all your weakness, because in our weakness we are made strong. Moses was weak. Moses was nobody. Moses had a speech impediment. Chaim, Moses, the hero of our faith, had less to offer than you do.
He was not a murderer.
Yes, he was. You forget. Did he not kill a man? Chaim, think. Your mind, your conscience, your heart tells you God cannot forgive you. I know the guilt is fresh. I know it is grievous. But you know, down deep, that God's grace is greater than our sin. It has to be, otherwise we all live in vain. Is anything too hard for God? Anything too big for him? Any sin too great for him to forgive? It would be blasphemy to say so. Chaim, if you are the one who can commit a sin too great for God to forgive, you are above God. That's how we can wallow in our sin and still be guilty of pride. Who do we think we are, the only ones God cannot reach with his gift of love? He found you, Chaim. He pulled you from the miry clay. Humble yourself in the sight of the Lord, and he will lift you up.
Back to my clothes, Chaim said. I could wear clothes from now until Jesus comes again and they wouldn't wear out?
Tzion sat back and waved dismissively. Chaim, if he can save you and me of all people, forgive us our sins, bring us back from spiritual death, this clothes thing is one of his lesser miracles. Forget the extra buttons, the patches, the thread. Go there with something you like, because you'll still be wearing it when this is all over.
David had pushed the limits of his ability to virtually set up the entire GC compound for his own remote computer monitoring. He breathed a prayer of thanks to God for allowing him to focus and work in spite of his grief. Mac and Abdullah were set to visit him in an hour to finalize the escape plan that included David and Hannah, and all four had agreed to carefully watch for believers they had been unaware of. It was already apparent that the brilliant teenager Chang Wong might be tagging along. David just had to figure out how to pull it off. While waiting word from Ming Toy, David checked his archives for meetings he had recorded but never listened to. In his Carpathia file was the one with Suhail Akbar, Walter Moon, Leon Fortunato, and Jim Hickman the day he himself had chatted with Hickman. David felt a chill as he prepared to eavesdrop, and he did a quick walkthrough of his area to make sure everyone was gone for the day. He could close a program and shut down with a single keystroke, but still he didn't want to be surprised by the wrong person. Something Hannah had asked a few days before haunted him, too. She had said, "How do you know there isn't someone just as technically astute as you are who is doing exactly what you're doing?" "Such as," he had said, "monitoring you, maybe." He had brushed it off. He had developed anti-hacking programs, anti-bugging devices. He had electronic ears everywhere and believed he could hear if someone breathed the word of something like that. It was impossible, wasn't it? Surely the brass wouldn't be so free to speak if they thought he was listening in. And if they were onto him, it seems they would have shut him down long before this. David believed the security chips he inserted in his phones and email programs were impenetrable, and he had tried to explain it to Hannah.
"I don't pretend to have a clue, David. Maybe you are the top computer genius alive, but ought you not be very careful?"
"Oh, I am."
"You are?"
"You bet.
But you tell me of phone calls and emails between you and your compatriots in the States. Not traceable. Not hackable. But you trace others. You hack others."
"I'm good."
"You're living on the edge.
There's no other way to live."
Hannah had dropped it with a shrug. He believed the only reason she raised the issue was because she cared, and she was, after all, a civilian when it came to technology. But he almost wished she hadn't planted the seed of curiosity in his mind.
With every message, every transmission, every phone call, he got the niggling feeling that someone, somewhere, could be looking over his shoulder. Everything he knew told him it couldn't be, but there was no accounting for intuition. He ran continuous checks on his program, searched for intruders. So far, so good. But Hannah had spooked him. If nothing else, it would keep him on his toes. David had begun the Carpathia meeting recording before he went to see Hickman, so he discovered several minutes of Carpathia alone in his office. The last time he had listened in that way, he had heard Nikolai praying to Lucifer. Now Nikolai was Lucifer. Did Satan pray to himself? No. But he did talk to himself. At first, David merely marveled at the fidelity of the sound. He had merely arranged a simple intercom system to both transmit and receive based on his commands, but it worked better than he had hoped. He heard when Nikolai sighed, cleared his throat, or even hummed. That was the strangest part. Here was a man who apparently did not sleep, yet he seemed to exude energy even when alone. David heard movement, walking, things being arranged. In the background, he heard the workers he had encountered just outside Carpathia's office. Carpathia said softly, as if thinking.
Mirrors. I need mirrors. He chuckled. Why deprive myself of the joy others luxuriate in? They get to look at me whenever they want.
He pushed the intercom button, and his assistant answered immediately. Excellency, Sandra said.
Is that foreman still out there?
He is, Lordship. Would you like to speak with him?
No, just pass along a message. Better yet, step in a moment.
My pleasure, she said, as if she meant it with all of her being.
Sandra had always seemed so cold and bored to David that he wondered how she interacted with Carpathia. She was more than 20 years his senior. David heard the squeak of a chair as if Carpathia had sat. Simultaneous with a soft knock, the door opened and closed.
Your Excellency, she said, to the sound of rustling.
Sandra, Carpathia said, you need not kneel every time you...
Pardon me, sir, she said, but I beg of you not to deprive me the privilege.
Well, of course not, if you wish, but...
I know you don't require it, sir, but to me it is a privilege to worship you.
He sighed without a trace of impatience, David thought.
What a beautiful sentiment, he said at last. I accept your devotion with deep satisfaction.
What may I do for you, my lord? She said. Do me the honor of asking anything of me.
Merely that I want several full-length mirrors in the remodeled office. I will leave it to those in charge of such matters to position them, but I believe it would add a nice touch.
I couldn't agree more, sir. I shiver at the thought of multiple images of you in here.
Oh, well, I thank you. Run along and deliver that message now.
Right away, sir.
And then you may go for the day.
But your meeting...
I will welcome them. Do not feel obligated.
As you wish, sir, but you know I would be more than happy...
I know.
The door opened and shut, and it sounded as if Carpathia rose once more. Just loud enough for David to hear, he said,
I too shiver at the thought of multiple images of me, you homely old wench. But you do know how to make a man feel worshipped.
Now it sounded as if he were moving chairs into position.
Akbar, Fortunato, Hickman, Moon... No, Moon, Akbar... Ah, must let Leon wonder about his proximity and access. Keep him nimble. Hickman needs assurances. All right.
Back to his intercom. Are you still out there, Sandra?
Yes, sir.
Before you go, get Mr. McCullum on the phone for me, please.
David froze, then chastised himself. He didn't care that Nikolai communicated with Mac. If David couldn't trust Mac, he couldn't trust anyone.
Captain McCullum, Carpathia said a few minutes later, how good to speak with you. You are aware, are you not, that 10% of all weapons of war were ceded to the global community when we were known as the United Nations? The rest were destroyed, and I am satisfied that our monitoring has confirmed that this was largely carried out. If any munitions remain, they are few and are likely in the hands of factions so small as to pose little threat. My question to you is, do you know where we stockpiled the armaments we received? You had nothing to do with that.
Well, yes, of course, I know, Captain. The question is merely probative. You are former military, you are a pilot, and you get around. I want to know if the word has leaked out where we inventory our weapons.
Good. That is all, Captain.
Clearly, Mac had told Nikolai he had no idea where the weapons were. As far as David knew, that was the truth. But what a massive operation that had to have been, and how was it pulled off without word getting out? And what might Carpathia be planning now?
Gentlemen, Carpathia said a few minutes later, welcoming the four visitors, please come in.
Allow me to be the first to kneel before you, Leon said, and kiss your hands.
Thank you, Reverend, but you are hardly the first.
I meant at this meeting, Fortunato whined.
And he won't be the last, Hickman said, and David actually heard the smack of his lips.
Thank you, Supreme Commander, thank you. Chief Akbar? Thank you. Chief Moon? My thanks. Oh, Reverend, no, please, I would appreciate it if you would sit here.
Here? Leon said, clearly surprised.
A problem?
I will sit anywhere His Excellency wishes, of course. I would even stand if you asked.
I'd kneel for the whole meeting, Hickman said.
Right here, my friend, Carpathia said, devoting much time and energy to putting people where he wanted them.
Sir, Leon began when they were settled, have you been able to sleep, get some rest?
You are worried about me, Reverend?
Of course, Excellency.
Sleep is for mortals, my friend.
Well spoken, sir.
I'm sure mortal, boys, gents, Hickman said. Slept like a rock last night. Out of shape, I guess. Gotta do something about this gut.
An awkward silence.
May we begin, Carpathia said.
Hickman muttered an apology, but Nikolai was already addressing Intelligence Chief Akbar.
Suhail, I have become convinced that the location of our armament remains confidential. Would you concur?
I would, sir, though I confess it baffles me.
Baffles is right, Hickman said. Seems to me we had hundreds of troops involved in this thing, and... Oh, my bad. I'm sorry. I'll wait my turn.
David could only imagine the look Carpathia must have given Hickman. He had to have known whom he was putting in such a lofty position. Having Hickman share space with Sandra and become primarily an errand boy with a big title proved Carpathia knew exactly what he was doing.
Peacekeeping forces prepared to go on the offensive, Chief Moon?
Yes, sir. Ready to deploy anywhere and everywhere. We can crush any resistance.
An update, Reverend?
On loyalty, Mark? Jerusalem? Religion?
Jerusalem, of course, Carpathia said, dripping sarcasm.
Leon was clearly hurt.
On top of it all, Excellency, he said. Program is prepared, loyalists ready, should be a triumphal entry in every sense of the word.
Commander Hickman, Carpathia said condescendingly, you may put down your hand. You need not ask for the floor here.
I can just jump in then?
No, you cannot just jump in. You have each been invited here because I need updates from your areas.
Well, I'm ready. I have that.
And when I want your input, I shall call on you. Understood?
Yes, sir.
Sorry, sir. No need to apologize.
Sorry.
Suhail or Walter, what kind of resistance may we expect in Jerusalem?
There was a pause, during which David assumed the two were looking at each other to avoid interrupting.
Come, come, gentlemen, Carpathia said. I have a planet to rule.
He chuckled as if joking, but it wasn't funny to David.
Akbar began, slowly and articulately. David thought that in another setting, Suhail could have been an effective intelligence chief.
Frankly, potentate, I do not believe the Judahites will show their faces. I am not discounting the effectiveness of their movement. Their numbers still seem large, but they are an underground cause, networked by computers. You will not likely see the mass public rally similar to the one at Kolak Stadium when Sion Ben I recall it well, Akbar. Tell me, is part of the reason they are not likely to make a fuss in Jerusalem because many of their ranks have been dissuaded by seeing a real resurrection, one that does not require blind faith?
Silence, except for the clearing of a throat. David assumed it was Suhail's.
No?
Surprisingly not, sir. That would certainly have persuaded me of your deity, except that I was already convinced of it.
Me too, Hickman said. Sorry.
Of course, Fortunato said, I had personal experience that proved it. And now... well, it's not my turn, is it?
The truth is, Excellency, Akbar continued carefully, our monitoring of the Judite website reveals they are even more entrenched. They believe, that your resurrection proves the opposite of what is so patently obvious to thinking people.
David flinched when he heard a loud bang on the table, the rolling back of a chair, and a string of expletives from Carpathia. That was something new. The Nikolai of before always kept his composure.
Forgive me, Holiness, Akbar said.
You understand that I'm merely reporting what my best analyst...
Yes, I know that, Carpathia spat. I just do not understand what it is going to take to prove to these people who is worthy of their devotion.
He swore again, and the other seemed to feel obligated to grumble loudly about the lunacy of the skeptics.
All right, Carpathia said finally. You think they will just snipe at us from the comfort of their hiding places?
Correct.
That is unfortunate. I was so hopeful of gloating in their faces. Any confirmation that they are harboring Rosenzweig?
David held his breath through another pause.
I admit we're stumped, Walter Moon said. We traced a few leads from people who thought they saw him running, taking a taxi, that kind of thing. We know for sure that stroke was phony.
You can say that again, Nikolai said.
Dang straight, Hickman offered.
Sorry.
He deceived me, Nikolai added. I have to give him that.
Sir, Moon continued, I am not second-guessing you, but please, Walter.
Well, you did pardon your attacker, maybe before you knew who he was. Carpathia roared with laughter.
You do not think I knew who murdered me? I lift that limp arm of his to start the applause, and a few seconds later I lurch away from the sound of a gun, he chops my feet from under me with that infernal chair, and the next thing I know I am in the lap of a madman. Well, I knew instantly what was happening, though I may never know why. But he was no frail old man. There was no stiff arm, and no limp arm, no scrawny senior citizen. He rammed that blade into me, and I could hear him gutting my skull. The man was hard as a rock and strong.
Ought to put out a worldwide all-points bulletin and use all our resources to bring him in, Hickman said. Got him on tape, show it to the world.
In due time, Carpathia said, calmer now, and it sounded to David as if Nikolai had sat and joined them again.
I pardoned him, knowing that a world of loyal subjects would relish avenging me should he ever show his face. Needless to say, we shall not prosecute a crime when that event occurs.
Needless to say, Hickman parroted.
And, Carpathia said, where are we with the accomplice?
Then not with a gun, Moon said.
We don't think he was Middle Eastern. Found his get-up and the weapon, matches the bullet, no prints, no leads.
You're convinced they were working together?
Carpathia sounded flabbergasted.
Convinced? I am not the law enforcement expert here, but the timing of those two attacks was just a little too coincidental, would you not agree?
I would, Hickman said. I worked that case and...
Proceed, Nikolai said.
I figure they were hedging their bets. If one of them didn't get you, the other one would. Guy with the gun would have been a diversion, but he's lucky he didn't kill anybody.
Akbar cleared his throat. You're aware there's a connection between Ben Judah and Rosenzweig?
Tell me, Nikolai said.
Ben Judah was once a student of Rosenzweig's.
You don't say, Nikolai said,
and it was the first time David had heard him use a contraction.
Find Ben Judah and you find Rosenzweig.
That's what I was thinking, Hickman said.
I'm ready for your report, James.
Me? Mine? You are? Yes, sir. Everything's on track. Injector thingies, beheaders,
Just a minute. Viv, Miss Ivins, gave me the correct terminology here. Bear with me. Loyalty confirmation facilitators. Got those coming, or going, depending. They're on their way here and there, and wherever we need them. Not all of them, certainly. Some are being made as we speak, but we're on schedule. I found a nurse here that has experience shooting biochips into dogs, I guess. But she's going to help train, and I got a lead on your pig.
My pig?
Oh, if you don't need a pig, they'll just butcher it and use it here. But if you needed a pig, I'm pretty sure we've got a big one ordered.
What would I want a pig for, James?
It's not that I heard or knew. I mean, that you actually need a pig for anything, really. But if you ever did, just let me know, all right? You need one for anything?
Who has been talking to you, Commander?
What?
You heard me.
Talking to me?
Carpathia was suddenly shouting, cursing again.
Mr. Hickman, what he said in these meetings in my private office is sacred. Do you understand?
Yes, sir. I would never
say sacred. The security of the global community depends on the confidentiality and trustworthiness of the communications in here. You've heard the old expression, loose lips sink ships?
Yeah, I have. I know what you mean.
Someone told you there was a discussion in this room about my need for a pig.
Well, I'd rather not...
Oh, yes, you had rather, Mr.